for. And it's just the way the mind works. When it's happy, it loves sort of seeing things in a slightly different way. So anyway, I think I've ad-libbed enough. The clock says, this clock says 1 minute before three, that clock says 1 minute after three, but because we follow the middle way, we'll take that to be three in between. So thank you for listening to the ad-lib. Now, welcome to the ongoing experts meditation class. If you come for the beginners meditation class, that is in the hall of the building to my right over there, led by Pamela Peter-Smith, who's leading that this week. So that'd be a wonderful thing to go over there. He's such a good teacher that I think I'll go over there myself. Okay, I'll behave. So, but anyway, that's for the people who come to the meditation class to begin with. This is the ongoing class. One of the differences is here we do sit meditation for much longer. We do like a 40, 45 minute sit of meditation. And it's wonderful that you can do that, because when I was young, to find a place where they would meditate, you know, just sort of once a week for half an hour was amazing. So for you to be meditating for 40, 45 minutes is absolutely brilliant. The longer you meditate, the more opportunity for you is to get deeper into the meditation. But even more than that is the fact that you can do that because many of you meditate on chairs. When I began meditating 50 years ago now, you expected to meditate on the floor. And I remember, just especially in places like Asia in Thailand, you had to meditate on the hard concrete, not even any cushions. All the cushions that were used by the senior monks, and us junior monks or novices, we had to sit on the hard concrete. And also, I noticed at the time that the senior monks were the ones who were fat. They didn't need cushions. They had their own natural upholstery. And it was the young ones who were thin and skinny and needed the cushions. But anyhow, hi Peter. Hasn't he got any people coming to his class? I hope he has. Hi. I don't know where. Has Peter got people going to his class? He must have. Okay. I mean, he's going home. No, anyway, no, I think he has got some people going to his class. So you had to sit on the hard concrete. And nevertheless, okay, I think it's all working okay. Nevertheless, after a while you got used to sitting on hard concrete. Just like this morning when we did our walking meditation. We did it outside, not walking meditation, our arms round. And when I go on the arms round, I don't wear any shoes or any socks. Is that correct? Yeah, you were on that arms round too. When I go on the arms round in the morning, you just walk with no coverings on your feet. And sometimes people say, does it feel cold? It feels cold for about 10 minutes, and then you can't feel your feet anymore. So you can't feel anything at all. No, it's all right. You survive. But anyway, back to being serious again. It's the trouble when I start telling jokes, you get in that mood, and you have to sort of pull yourself back from there again. So when you are sitting meditation on a chair, it should be really comfortable. Because we have all sorts of chairs. We got the upholstered chairs in the front over there. I think they fill up pretty quickly. So we've also got, I mentioned this yesterday, last night, we've also got that chair over there. And I said, no one ever sits in there. And of course, as soon as I mentioned that, the big armchair, someone said, okay, I'll sit in there for you. And they sat in there for the meditation and for the talk. Anyway, he's a past president of our Buddhist society, so that was okay. But anyhow, yes, let's be serious again. So when you're sitting down, the whole purpose of posture is being able to sit in a position where you can be comfortable. And in the meditation, the idea is that you are comfortable enough that the body doesn't actually have any aches and pains or discomfort. Nothing is happening there, because if you're comfortable, then the body can disappear. It's one of those experiences which was very meaningful for me. When I was a lay person, I'd go to any place to do a meditation retreat, and this place was a Zen retreat, just being built in the north of England, Throstle Hold it was called. And I had no idea about Zen meditation. Sometimes you think one meditation is different than the other, but in this particular tradition, we had to meditate with our eyes open, just watching, just staring at a whitewashed wall. And I thought, what are you supposed to do? He said, nothing, just sit there and look. And at least I did have previous experience of meditation. So what I managed to do was to be able to just watch, being mindful, and not thinking, not fantasizing or dreaming, just being in this moment with a silent mind, just watching this wall. And because I was still and nothing was happening, that's when, with full awareness, the wall vanished. It kind of shocked me, with your eyes open, what you were looking at suddenly disappeared, like somebody had hit it with a magic wand and it wasn't there anymore. And it was a weird experience, but of course I understood pretty quickly what was happening. That don't need to be scared. What was happening is, with your sense of sight, it only responds to things which move. And after a while, when the image is still, it is like the computer screen. Nothing moves, and so the screen turns off. And that's what was happening with my sense of sight, it turned off. And that gave me a nice insight into how meditation works. If you're in a place which is reasonably silent, today we got the air cons on because it was very chilly when we first came in here, that the sound of the air con, you can all hear the sound of the air con? After a while you won't hear it at all, because it's an ambient sound, doesn't change. The taste of your saliva, the smell in your nose, it's pretty the same all the time. That hasn't changed. After a while that will turn off too. And then one of the hardest of the senses to turn off is your body, sense of touch. And then after a while, if you're comfortable, that turns off as well. Just like you can't hear sound, you can't see sight, you can't smell, you can't taste, you can't feel physical touch. So what happens next? That is when the five senses disappear. Just by being still, it's the nature of the brain, it will turn off those senses. And as long as you are peaceful enough, you're not thinking about that world of the five senses, if you're not thinking about them, then what will become very clear in your mind is what we call the jitta, the mind itself. And that's what we usually call the nimittas. Nimittas is a word in meditation, meaning the beautiful lights which appear in the mind once those five senses have been calmed down to the point they're not active for a while. It's like instead of seeing the image on the computer screen, you're seeing the screen itself. So this is one way of describing what meditation is and why it's really important to be physically comfortable when you meditate. Because from that physical comfort, it makes it easier to allow the five senses to settle down and disappear. Of course, if those five senses are still very active, because there's sounds of motorbikes or big cars outside, or there's sounds of police sirens, or your physical body is irritated by a sickness or illness, then you will find it's harder to calm everything down. The point, though, it's not impossible. It can be done by learning how to not being so concerned with the sound outside or with the physical feelings. The way of doing that is to somehow distance yourself from those sounds. just like imaginary distance. They may be just outside, but sometimes you, even in here, you can get so quiet, so peaceful inside of yourself that any sounds are like something happening a long distance away. And you're like, they may be right next to you, but it feels like they're, you know, a mile away. When that happens, then you find that you can just distance yourself even from loud sounds, and you can feel very, very, very peaceful. So it's not impossible to calm the mind down and allow some of all those five senses to disappear if you are skilled in meditation. Again, one of those skills is not being involved in those feelings in the body, in those sounds in your ear, just looking upon them as not yours, just like clouds in the sky, just passing over, just like nothing which you have any business with. If you don't have any business with those five senses, then of course they can vanish very easily. Even having no business with aches and pains in the body, just they're there, but they're not mine, not my business. This is good enough, I don't have to deal with them. Then they disappear. It's almost like ignorance, not being concerned with them is a great way of them not being important, and they disappear. It reminds me of that teaching of the Buddha about physical sensations. He said that physical sensations, especially physical pain, is like the two darts, he said. Those two darts or two thorns, they have the mental thorn and a physical thorn. If you have a pain in your body, the physical part of it is there, you can't really do much about it. But the mental part of it, which is your reaction, that you have full capability of calming that down so much that the majority of the irritation or pain totally disappears. That's called the emotional thorn. And those two thorns which you're pricked with every unpleasant experience, by learning how just to not react to what you're experiencing, then the pain just disappears. Even one little story about that, there was, we didn't have many books in our library in Thailand monastery in the first few years, but one book we did have in there was a book written by some hippies over in the United States about how to give birth to kids. And people were sometimes wondering when they saw that in our library. I forget what the title was, but it was about, you know, how in remote communities, you know, when you don't have many doctors around, a different way of women giving birth. And apparently it was such a popular book eventually, it was quite a bestseller and became a classic. They were doing little things like when somebody got pregnant in the hippie community, that they said that when the pregnancy was at its almost coming to its end and about to give birth, they never ever called the experience of giving birth labor pains. They said labor energies. And whenever there was any contractions, labor energies, just before birth, they had as many people as possible around the woman who's about to give birth, cheering her along. Whoa, that was a good one. Yeah, let's see it again. And so they gave so much positive energy to the birthing process, they never looked upon it as pain. The people around them never reacted to it as pain. And so the woman actually giving birth never saw it as pain. Just amazing energies rushing through her body. And said that changing of perception, you know, of something which is normally extremely painful, meant they had very short labor periods. And also, they said it wasn't painful. It was just incredible different types of energy, the energy of giving birth. So anyway, that change of perception is another way of learning how to deal with so-called irritations and changing them around. And when it comes to things like thought inside of your a meditation, people often complain about thinking about this and thinking about this, wandering off into aimless thoughts. At the very least, see if you can take away your mental reaction to those thoughts. One of the ways of doing that is, it's not mine. It's just this static energy coming through my brain. It doesn't belong to me. They're useless thoughts, they're just thoughts, they come. You don't get involved in them, don't get caught up in them. Don't get hooked by them like fishermen dropping a line in a river trying to catch you. Leave them alone, let them be. Don't even get involved in them. And then after a while they just disappear. They vanish. I'm talking about your thoughts now. And this is actually a way when we take off the emotional response to thoughts. They're not good, they're not bad. They're just sort of static, just blowing in the wind. And what comes, goes. Where they come from, you don't know. Where they go, you don't know. You just see them in this moment as they pass you by. And so when you don't own the thoughts, you know, you don't give them importance, then they disappear. So this is a way of learning how to calm everything down. And when those things do calm down, that's when the mind, the jitta, really powerful, beautiful, bright, and very joyful, comes into your mind and you have a wonderful experiences in the deep meditations. So anyway, now we can actually do something. Actually, that's the wrong word. Instead of now we're going to do something, now we're going to not do anything. We're just going to close our eyes and let it happen. Your job is to get out of the way and let it happen. Okay, so you'd like to all close your eyes now. And as usual, I'll guide the beginning of the meditation and then be quiet so you can all hopefully enjoy some nice peace and watch the peace grow in intensity. But first of all, I can't go past the beginning of a little sweeping kindfulness meditation through your own body. Because I do that because it is so helpful. You can go fast or go slow depending on the state of your body, but start with your feet. How are your feet positioned now? How are they? If they were like a little child, which you're related to, and you're caring for them. Two little kids, one on each end of your leg. You ask them, how are you? And sometimes they may feel ignored, but now you're caring for them. As I'm caring for my two feet, I just ask them, do you want to be moved? And they say, yeah. You're sensitive enough, you can feel whether you can make them more comfortable. If you're on a chair, you need to push your feet further out. So bring them together, tighten them further under the chair. What do you need to do for your feet to make them as comfortable as you can? Just even the intention to make them comfortable is enough for them to relax. And this is just starting with the feet, so your abilities, your strength of mindfulness and relaxation, kindness, can start growing. So now you turn it to the ankles. How are your ankles now? And I can pick up a feeling in my ankle. It's a pleasant feeling, nothing wrong there. But I can relax my ankle even more. It was a few moments ago. At least that's what it feels like. It's like parts of it get loosened, knots get untied. So everything is just there in my ankles, just in its right place, no tightness, no squashing, no pressure anywhere. And it feels good, which is important. And move up to the calves of my legs. Some quite big muscles there. I'll make sure that each one of those is at ease. You're sitting on a chair, make sure those calves feel in a good position, with no tight pieces of clothing restricting any flow of blood or lymph or whatever. And I go up to my knees. You get some very strong awareness of your knees, the different parts of your knees. Especially if there's an injury somewhere, and that's when you can focus on that part of your body and relax it very deeply. It surprises me when I first started this how much, by just being aware of a part of the body and being kind to it, how you can ease a lot of tension which you may have gotten used to, how everything can sort of open up and be free. And then move up to my thighs, big muscles. Make sure that they are all comfortable. Then to my buttocks. They're sitting on a cushion, it's really comfortable today. But a lot of times I can fidget if I need to right now. Fidget to make sure that it's the most comfortable. Even a 45 minute sitting, if you're not careful at the very beginning to get into a good posture, then the buttocks may be painful later on and disturb the peace of your mind. And then you go up to your waist, making sure your waist is comfortable. And this is the point where I straighten up my back, just so the waist can be at ease. This is a feeling which it's used to, it feels comfortable with. Once the waist is at ease, just check my back, make sure that's in a good position. Sometimes it's okay to experiment. Just relax the back and lean against the backrest of the chair if you wish, or sometimes straighten it. Find out what works best for you. But then I also encourage to sweep your attention up your torso, the inside of your body, up the digestive tract. I just had a cup of tea before I came out into the reception area, so I can feel sort of that tea, if you like, in the digestive tract. In the stomach to make sure that's comfortable. And then I go up the body, and if I feel any tightness, tension, now sometimes I don't know how to describe it, but sometimes like a bruise or something. Not just a sharp pain, it can be all sorts of dull aches and pains in my torso. If I ever locate any, I just stay there for a while, in kindness, and relax it. I just recall not really knowing anything about therapy, but just kindness has a powerful therapeutic benefit. Just having someone who cares for you, just stroking that wound, or just looking at it, giving attention, that allows that part of the body to receive your attention rather than your fear. And that means that it can relax and open up, and all these natural healing properties of the body can actually go to work. Lots of healing can happen when you're not afraid and when you relax and when you are kind to parts of your own body. And I get up to my shoulders, and the image which I use is these bunches of strings, these muscles on either side of the shoulder, or either side of the neck. And I imagine they've been pulled, stretched. They're under stress because of the way I've been using my hands and my arms. But now I just let go on both ends. When something's stretched, that's a way to relax it. Loosen those bunches of strings called your shoulder muscles. And you soon feel whether you are relaxing those muscles. And when you do, everything becomes at ease. The muscles are loose. And that's where they can be very comfortable for the whole meditation. And I just go down my arms, past my elbows and wrists, just checking that so that everything is in its proper place. I take my time with this, but it's not just relaxation which I am doing, it's also strengthening every moment the mindfulness and the kindness. They get more powerful. So by the time I get to my hands, I can feel so much down there. And I will adjust my, actually today I won't. Today my fingers tell me they're comfortable as they are. And I leave them like that. It's not the normal posture for my hands, but today it seems to work. And then once my arms are comfortable, I go back up to my shoulders and my neck. Sometimes you get a sore neck. It's because your head is not in a good position on top of the neck. So I always try and make sure to move my head on top of the neck, a little bit of exercise, until I find the most comfortable position for my head on top of the neck. When I find that most comfortable position, I leave my head there. And as you all know, the last thing which I do is to be aware of the feelings around the eyes and the mouth. Even my glasses, they were uncomfortable, so I've adjusted them. The feelings around the eyes and the mouth. Those feelings on the face. Their comfort is a reflection of my emotional comfort. If I am at ease, then the feelings on my face are at ease. So learning how to relax those muscles, be so aware of them, you know whether they need to be loosened and how that loosening happens. So I'm not screwing up my facial muscles. I'm not pulling at them. Everything is as loose as I can manage it. And then I become aware of my whole body. And just making sure all the parts, one by one, are okay. Then feel the whole body. Relax as much as I can possibly bring it to be. And I always wait here, because I know that when my body is relaxed enough, I'll feel this delightful feeling in the body. It's coming in now. The delightful pleasure of bodily relaxation. It's not an indulgence, because I know once I can perceive the pleasure of relaxation, my body relaxes even more. It goes deeper into physical peace. And I know with a body which is at peace like this, it will easily disappear. Nothing much is going on. But nevertheless, I deliberately turn towards the mind, asking myself, how peaceful am I? And once I know, I'm not as peaceful as I was, say, yesterday when I started meditating. Why? I need to come closer into the present moment. Forget about the past and all the jobs and duties I have to do, I have done before, and all the things which I should be doing later. Meditation is like free time, free from the past and the future. I know that those perceptions, they may be responsible if I was a manager. This is not managing time. This is meditation time. So I deliberately let them go, not being concerned with anything to do with the past or the future. And instead coming into this present moment, where there's nothing to do. This is free time. And freedom is where I'm supposed to be. And as soon as you perceive and value the simplicity of the present moment, to value it, then it can stay with you. And the mindfulness and kindness get stronger and stronger. But I know if I get really into the present moment, very focused, not smeared over the present moment, but right into the present moment, then I can't say anything. The thought disappears. Silence and awareness take over. An awareness when I can't give things names. You just enjoy them, aware of them, really fully, without describing them to yourself or trying to retain them in your memory. Being with every moment, and this period, breath might come up, loving kindness, all sorts of meditation objects might come up. let them. Don't do it yourself. Your job is just to be in this moment silent and let that silence grow. Or rather, let things which are still vanish. I will now be quiet. getting close to the end of the meditation now. How do you feel? How pleasant, delightful, profound is the peace in your mind? What caused it? What brought it to be? How many things disappeared? And how do you feel after? And how is your body? How does that feel? I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times. As usual, please wait for the 3rd ringing of the gong to take you out from the meditation. Well, thank you for the questions. Very good. One of the things I always enjoy at the end of a meditation is the mindfulness is always much stronger than normal. I needed some water. And this water, just one sip, was just so sweet. Much more sweet than you ever expect it. Just the mind was just, it can see so much more deeply into everything. Any questions from those people here, first of all? Okay, I'll do some from the overseas first then. Today we got one from Brazil, one from USA, another one from the USA, and a 3rd one from USA. Okay, here we go. From Brazil, first of all. I've lost some friends and relatives to suicide. I am a depressed guy myself. I don't really know how to deal with that. First of all, don't measure yourself against others. You started by saying you lost some friends and relatives to suicide. You have many friends and relatives who do not commit suicide. And sometimes, as I've mentioned just in passing, that just having a glass of water was just so delightful. Just one mouthful was just gorgeous. And when you have nice meditation, there's no way you can ever be depressed. Basically, you've got this sense of seeing joy in anything. So one wonderful thing to do if you feel depressed is just do more meditation. And after a while, you can't avoid it. Just by your body relaxes and feels good, the mind is still. And you don't lose any hope because you lose a whole of the future. You don't even think about it and the past. And just this present moment is just so gorgeous. You manage to see so much more joy and happiness and beauty in things. Just I remember just even last week I woke up early in my cave. I went to go to the toilet and decided just to not use a flashlight or any lights. Just feel myself along the path to the door of my toilet. And I remember feeling the toilet door of all things. And that toilet door just felt so smooth, like satin. And just the experience of that, I'm not exaggerating, it was just, this is how the feelings in my hands were just so strong and so sensitive. It's like many of those, it's like, well, maybe to say that, you know, you have your, it's my spectacles, and somebody cleans up all the muck from those spectacles, and you can see so clearly. That's like what meditation does. So whatever you experience, whatever you see, is really joyful and happy. And you can't get any sort of discontent or weariness. That's one of the, what I read out last week in the sutta class last Sunday, that when the five hindrances start to disappear, there's two other things disappear as well, and that's arati and tandi, just Pali words, just to show that I'm not just making this up, this is real. Arati is discontent. You need to have discontent to get depression. That's just not there for you. Whatever's happened, you can see so much joy and happiness and beauty in it. And that's what happens in the world when you really get some nice meditation. Of course, if you are in deep depression, then sometimes you do need medical help. But in most people, they just allow themselves to think depressive thoughts, negative thoughts, and not even to get in there to see there's so much beauty in this world, even in the toilet door. And even just, I mean, the view which I have right in front of me, just these beautiful trees in the sunshine, it's gorgeous. And again, I'm not exaggerating. So once you can start to see beauty in things, you can't avoid it when you get into some deep meditation. The discontent and also the weariness. That's another thing with depression, you're just tired, just got no energy left. Just is also no point in trying to raise energy. But you don't need to raise energy, the energy comes by itself. When the person gets very peaceful and still, you see so much joy wherever you go. That's just the nature of what meditation does. So, in brief, if you are really depressed and maybe think you're suicidal, get some positive thinking and some maybe medical attention, but that's only a temporary fix. The real fix is learning how to make the mind not fault-finding, but joy-seeing. Not just seeing two black bricks in the wall, but seeing the 998 good bricks. And I was just looking at the internet a few days ago and found that there was, I actually should have opened it up, somebody was having a video about 998 bad bricks in a wall. I don't know if, I never did it. That's one of the things which I invented. And anyway, it'd be wonderful if, actually I don't mind people using these stories. I think it's wonderful that whatever you invent and the stories you make up and they go around on the internet and become popular, marvelous. But the two bad bricks in the wall, those are ones I laid myself. And the point was, why was I always thinking about those, looking at them, when there was 998 beautiful bricks? I literally could not see those beautiful bricks. And that's why I got negative towards my first wall, which I made. And once you saw those beautiful bricks, you didn't feel upset about the wall ever again. And this is actually what happens with depression. You're just seeing two bad bricks somewhere and you can't not see them. And if you can see the good bricks in your wall, whoever you are, depression vanishes. And once the mind gets very, very peaceful and can see the full picture, all the walls are never that bad. And they're gorgeous, they're beautiful. And all the trees in the forest. Amazing what you can see. Anyway, next question from Indiana in USA. In deeper meditation. In deeper meditation, frequently my body disappears, great. But sometimes it almost disappears. and it feels like I'm floating 12 inches above my cushion. Great. Do you have any reflections? Yeah, make sure you don't sort of disturb yourself, otherwise you'll fall down and maybe get some bruises. No, it's usually it's a case that you're not really levitating. It's very rare to see someone levitating. But nevertheless, it feels that way. Great. Enjoy what's happening. It's just this is a projection of the mind. And there's all sorts of amazing experiences you have, you know, in the mind when you get into some nice deep meditation. It's almost like you're free of your body, and your body has to be heavy sitting down here. But to feel it even like sinking into the ground, or feeling it expanding. But you have to be very careful. If you are having good meditation like that, make sure you're not disturbed. Because I remember just feeling my body really expanding. And then someone disturbed my meditation. And I came out of the meditation, I got stuck like this. I'm full of excuses. No, but those are sort of, what is actually happening there, I should explain it in more depth rather than just as in humour, is that it's like your perceptions are being freed, they're being liberated, they're not so stuck in a certain way of looking at things. And sometimes when those perceptions are freed, they play around. You can start to see things which are impossible. And it is just, it's real for you, but it's nothing dangerous, you know what's going on. Just the conditioning of your perceptions is being loosened. And it's the first time your perceptions are being free. It's just like the kid who comes from, say, Malaysia and comes to Australia for the first time. They go to university. They're away from the perceptions and control of their mother and father. Yeah, they're free, and so they party for the first few weeks. Don't do any studies at all. And that's just, you know, you feel that freedom, enjoy it. That's like your perception being free, and enjoys it, and just does all sorts of weird stuff. And I always tell people, when that happens, just, again, enjoy it. Okay, I'll mention one of those perceptions which I had years and years ago. And just, in the meditation, okay, like nimitta, just the body was just disappearing. And instead of seeing a nice nimitta, a nice beautiful light, I had this wonderful vision of me having a psychic battle with a Hindu monk. And we were flying around, zapping each other and stuff. It was really good fun. This wasn't a dream, this was like in meditation. And of course, because it was my nimitta, I won. And that's one of the reasons you knew it wasn't sort of reality. But I indulged it for a good reason. It was like giving yourself a little bit of boost of happiness and pleasure, a little bit of sweet, you know, after you've done lots of meditation. And that's what happens. My perception was just so free, you can actually imagine yourself doing these things. It's not really imagination, because it's much more real than imagination. But that's what happens when you can... just your body starts to disappear. This is just floating 12 inches above your cushion. Great! Do something more interesting than that. It's quite boring after a while, just floating. Just expand your body, sink into the ground, and just have this golden glows of energy coming out of you, healing humanity or whatever. And then just do that for a bit of fun, but that just strengthens that ability not to be afraid. And when the body just starts to disappear, and the perceptions are not so bound by all the rules and conditions which you put on it, you feel far more free. And then eventually, of course, you can get to the useful nimittas, the beautiful lights, powerful, single, and you can go right into them. And that's really good fun. So thank you for mentioning that, because it's a long time I only talk about this sort of stuff on retreats. Just when your perceptions get freed and have some fun. Okay, next question. How can I keep myself motivated so the body can heal from anxiety and other medical problems? Because, you know, sometimes that whenever you are free from anxiety, you know, you feel just so much, you see the happiness of freedom. Freedom is a very pleasant thing to experience. You don't have to make use of your freedom and go here, go there, but the very fact you are not controlled, you're not enclosed, you're not having to be bound by these rules, which I don't know who sets these rules, but you're like rule free. It doesn't mean you have to go anywhere, but you just, you know, you're not enclosed anymore. And that gives you a great sense of joy and peace. And anxiety, sometimes people's anxiety is based on the past, what happened to them in the past or whatever. Just because it happened in the past, it doesn't have to happen again in the future. And how to heal from that anxiety. I said this to some people some time ago. I think you may have heard this little story from my own life. This wasn't a true story, but this was like, I can't really remember this, whether this was a dream or this was one of these complicated images. I think it was one of these very lucid dreams I had many years ago. And this particular lucid dream, that I was dreaming in the poor place where I grew up, being attacked. This didn't happen, but being attacked by a group of kids, thugs, older than I was, and I resisted, and I was knifed many times and felt the pain of knives penetrating my body. And it hurt so badly that I went into like a coma. It was the only place deep inside of myself where I could be protected, where I could feel safe. And I checked later on, this never happened, I've got no wounds on me. But in this like really real dream, I was in this place deep inside where no one could reach me and where I could not be sort of hurt. And I remember sort of coming out of that coma in some institution many years later, at least that's what it felt like in the dream. And it was only because of the kindness of one of these nurses. And I remember the kindness gave me the feeling of safety. I've been hurt really bad in this dream. Hurt so bad that you just, the only place you can escape is deep inside. And then needing that kindness to be able to take away all of those restraints which kept me inside and kept other people out, and learning to come outside and be alive again. It was a really interesting dream. I never forgot it. And this is why, you know, you can understand anxiety. A lot of it is you're putting these barriers, protections against yourself because you've been hurt before. You don't want to be hurt again. And when you're in a very kind environment, having really good friends, and you can feel their softness, their compassion, that they will protect you and feel you can come out of that anxiety. You don't have to protect anything, which means that you feel that safety and that wonderful freedom. No, but when you're meditating, you do sometimes have dreams, but not ordinary dreams, so they're very powerful. So, motivated. Do you want to live in a prison of anxiety? Of course not. And when you know that there is a way out, you don't need to be motivated. You really haven't got much choice. You can't live like that. It's living in a very dark prison cell. If you can find some kindness and kind people around you, safe people, then you can come out and have a peaceful time. Like, imagine this place. For 45 minutes, each one of you had your eyes closed, meditating. Some people think you're very vulnerable. You know, anything could happen to you. People could inject you, and you know, you could wake up later on with one of your kidneys gone or something. That's never happened, ever. But how can you actually not be anxious when you have your eyes closed and you can't feel your body after a while? There's a trust you have in this place. We've been here for so many years now, and you know, it's a very genuine organization. It's kind, we're not after your money, we're not after anything. Just as an organization, we want to give to you. You know, be kind, share these wonderful teachings so people can come and sit here and they don't need to feel afraid. They don't need to feel anxious. Did you feel anxious when you were sitting here? You feel so comfortable, peaceful, at ease. And that's one of the benefits of kindness and also precepts. That's why we have things like five precepts. It's an expression of our goodness, the fact we care for one another and you feel safe in this place. We won't steal anything, we won't sort of kill anybody, you know, commit adultery or sexually assault anybody. We won't lie, and we don't take the alcohol or drugs. It's wonderful. And that makes you, hopefully, you feel safe. And safe, you can relax and not feel anxious. Because look, later on when you get into the deep meditations, crikey, I mean, your body is vanishing, you're going to places you've never been to before. And I can understand when you need to know that was a bit scary at first, but I also had some confidence in my own life, confidence that I was safe. Some of the stuff which I did, I was thinking, how could I ever do that? The time last week I was mentioning when I went through that gang of thugs in Acton, and the only way they started chanting the, you know, the Buddha, 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 as I got closer and closer, and as I got closer and closer, I lifted up my hands in my, what I thought was a kung fu pose. They didn't know, and they parted and let me walk right through them. It was a crazy moment, but I didn't have fear. The anxiety wasn't there. At the time, I think I probably should have had anxiety, but it wasn't there. So because there's this wonderful trust in the Dhamma, the trust in the brown robe or whatever it was, the trust in being here, and that takes our anxiety. So to heal from anxiety, just have lots of kindness. Keep things like precepts, don't take alcohol or non-medicinal drugs. And that gets you feeling strong and protected and peaceful and happy. And no anxiety. Lastly, from Oregon. Is the mind separate from the brain? Yes. And how do we develop the relationship between the two? That's a very good question. It seems to be that, you know, the mind, the stream of consciousness, this is actually, you know, what takes birth, you know, in the body. And sometimes that mind is very strong, and that's why you do have those occasions, rare occasions, when babies, when they are born, speak. I mentioned one of those cases last night. But one of the other cases from here, if you don't remember it, fascinating case, people who weren't Buddhists. They were just Aussies. I don't think they had any religion. And they had two children when the second one was born. And the second one was brought home after the hospital. It was only a few days old. And then mum and dad, relaxing at home in the evening, said to their elder son, go and say goodnight to your younger son and then go to bed. And so he went up to the youngest son and said, good night, Peter. And then Peter said to his elder brother, good night, Paul. Is it possible? And there was two of them there. So they both stopped whatever they were doing, reading a book or something, and turned around to their kids, not believing what they just heard. And then the elder son, only about two, said that again. Good night, Peter. And Peter said, this time, both of them really listening carefully, good night, Paul. And he said, it wasn't a baby voice, it was an adult voice. And they said, what the heck was going on? And they came to see us because, you know, we're Buddhists and that sort of stuff. You know, they get sort of told to get excommunicated or something, or they were possessed or something, if in some religions. But because we're Buddhists, they thought, oh, you can maybe understand. They said, yeah, that was the kid talking. Why not? Because the brain can't do it. The brain is not developed enough yet. But the mind can. It's the mind, the stream of consciousness from your previous life. And of course, you know, how many times we have people talking about their previous lives. And even one person today told me that their cousin or whatever, when they were three, started talking about their previous life. But they've forgotten it themselves now. But their sister and sister heard it. So there's lots of stuff like that. The first few years of your life, the mind is still pretty strong, but then it's like it gets taken over by the brain. Maybe 6 or 7 or something, around that age. And that's when little kids have spontaneous recall of their previous life. They don't have any recall anymore. The mind takes over. And then at the end of the life, when the brain starts to fall apart and it's not functioning anymore, you have, you know, one of those phenomena. You can look it up in the internet. What was it called? Terminal lucidity. That's when people are just so sick, in comas, having morphine, goodness knows what else, painkillers, and they're out of it, just laying in bed, they're not being able to remember anything at all. And in the last few minutes of their life, they have this great clarity. The last time I mentioned that, I did a talk on that over in Singapore, and I asked in the hospital there, at a Buddhist hospital, I asked how many of the nurses and doctors and other sort of support staff in the palliative care experienced this terminal lucidity in their patients. And about a third of the staff there put their hand up. They're being honest. This is the case when one of the doctors here, I don't know where he is, but anyway, he came up after I was talked about it and said, yeah, that happened to me. That was a case when one of his patients, you know, started the dying process. He was really overworked, as most young doctors are. And so he rushed to the bedside and found out, yeah, the dying process had started. And in the drawer next to the bed, they kept a little, the patient kept a book of all of the close relations to call up if anything goes wrong. So the doctor had no choice. He couldn't actually keep the patient alive. The dying process was coming and it was irreversible. So he started ringing up the patient's family. And he got to the patient's daughter, and call her up and say, please come to the hospital right now. Your father is dying. And that's when the father opened his eyes and said, please tell Julie how much I love her. There was a daughter being called up, really clear, as if he was in 100% health, and then he closed his eyes and died. That's an example of terminal lucidity. Just as the brain turns off, the mind has a little chance of actually talking, just like you're a perfectly healthy, ordinary person, with your memory totally intact. The mind has taken over from the brain. It's fascinating that, you know, that's the only way that you can explain it. That's the way that as a Buddhist you'd explain it, what happens. But anyway, you'd better finish off in a moment. Remember that there is another Saturday afternoon meditation class here for everybody next week. And as soon as we finish the Saturday afternoon meditation class next week, I rush off back to Bodhinyana Monastery to get ready for the rains retreat. There's still one more left. So even this is terminal. It comes to an end. But anyway, and so during the rains retreat, I always make this announcement. And if you don't go to Bodhinyana Monastery for the rains retreat, please take this announcement carefully. And that is that during the rains retreat, you know, we try and keep all the monks and the Anangarikas and novices all sort of in the monastery as calm and peaceful as possible. So it is a burden if we have to come out for your funeral services. So please may I ask you out of compassion for the Sangha, as faithful Buddhists and members of our Buddhist society, please don't die during the Rains Retreat. You've got 10 days, I think, no, 8 days before we start our Rains Retreat. So if you don't die in the next 8 or 9 days, please delay it until after the Rains Retreat is finished, after the Katina ceremony in October. Thank you very much for your considerations. Okay, so we now can pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha.